If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, it's Shirley Gutkowski at Crosslink Radio, where we talk about health from the eye teeth on down. I'm here to help you understand some of the mysteries of health from the perspective of the oral health care provider, which is what I am. I'm a clinical dental hygienist. I'm in the prevention mode, helping you keep your health at its optimum by bringing you a wide variety of guests with the information that you want to know. A few months ago, I decided that not enough people knew enough about sugar. And so this is one of the episodes where we're going to be taking a deep dive into different sugars. And I think this is important because we are on this big mission in the United States to get rid of all sugar. And when you do that, you miss an important ingredient. You miss an important reason for being alive, really. and there are replacements that are safe and healthful, and nobody really knows that, and nobody knows how to use those replacements. So that's what we are doing in my little series of sugar shows in the next couple of months. I've got quite a little list of sugars to take a deep dive into, and this is the first of those. And today we are going to be talking with a friend of mine who I met at Career Fusion, as they were one of our corporate partners there, and it is Peter DeCock, and he is a food technologist who began his career in 1979 as an R&D project leader at General Mills. He then later became an R&D leader at OZF, which is probably a European company, and was the head of plants in the Netherlands and Belgium, and was responsible for building an R&D organization and pilot facilities. He led multiple project development teams in the area of fine bakeries, soft candies and gums, hard candies, chocolates and pralines, panned confectionery, and ice cream. Yay, ice cream. Peter joined Cargill in 1992 as a deputy manager of the European Food Application Center. From 1995, he directed for more than 10 years a global multidisciplinary team to run all erythritol-related research, complete its safety database to achieve regulatory approval in more than 50 countries around the world, coordinate the capital investments needed to start manufacturing and successfully launch erythritol on the global market. From 2006 onwards, Peter was the Global Nutrition Regulatory Affairs Manager for Cargill Health and Nutrition. Since 2014, he leads global nutrition innovation to develop erythritol-based dietary and personal care solutions for improved oral and cardiovascular health. Yes, you heard me right. Peter currently is based at the Corporate R&D Center in Belgium. He's a regular speaker at international events and has published numerous papers. Hi there, Peter.
Good morning, Shirley. That was an impressive introduction. I guess that's just one of the benefits when you get older, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you can't do all that but before you're 29, right?
That's right.
So let's talk about erythritol, and I'm going to spell it in case people are listening where they can't understand what we're saying. It's it's erythritol, and it is a sugar, and it's a sweetener. So could you kind of give us the 1, 2, 3 beginnings of how erythritol came to be and how it's made?
Sure. It was already early 90s, late 80s, early 90s that the product that, you know, scientists in Japan became aware that this might be a very nice molecule, sugar. Actually, it's a sugar alcohol, a polyol, a bulk sweetener. Of high interest for the food industry because it has the characteristics of sugar but does not have any calories. And so a long trajectory of development started to develop the safety database, manufacturing, food applications, and all that work. And so this product became legal in the United States back in 1996. It still took a few years before it developed into the markets and manufacturing facilities were sufficiently present to introduce it really in the market. And now it is used as a zero-calorie bulk sweetener to replace sugar. It's tooth-friendly, and it is sold by Cargill under the brand name Zeros. But as you correctly spelled the name of the, you know, the product
originally. Did I do it wrong
that's
again?
That's how you find it on the label. That's how you find it on the label. Yeah, it's a terrible name, I know, but that's how it is listed on the ingredient declaration.
It's listed as Zeros. Is that what you just said?
No, it's listed as erythritol. So
okay.
Erythritol is a name that is a common and usual name by which the product is listed as an ingredient on the ingredient deck.
Okay. So we will see it on a label, and we probably already do see it on a label.
Absolutely. It is already present in a lot of products. And it is a product. This molecule occurs already. We are consuming it already as long as mankind exists, to be honest, because it is naturally occurring in many fruits, in pears and grapes, in all fermented foods. You have it to from low to somewhat higher levels. So in beer and wine and cheese. So we already consume it for ages, and but it's made by a fermentation process, which is also recognized as a natural process. So that's nice, so it is a yeast that acts that consumes carbohydrates, and it can be, you know, carbohydrates coming from corn or from sugar cane. It consumes these sugars and then carbohydrates and then metabolizes these into erythritol, which is then extracted and purified from the fermentation medium.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's pretty cool. So I think I heard you say that you could make erythritol from the cane of the sugar after they take the sugar out. So the bagasse, is that what I heard you say?
Yeah, correct. So you can take the sugar out of cane and then let a yeast act on that sugar and then turn that sugar into erythritol. And that's actually how we make it as well. That's one of the grades that we make. And then you end up with a non-caloric sugar. Again, it's sugar between brackets. It's not a real sugar chemically seen, but it looks like sugar. It has the appearance of sugar. It has a crystallinity. It is typically salts as a food ingredient in crystalline form. It is also present in quite a number of foods. And you can see actually the products and how it looks like best where you would buy Truvia. Truvia is a combination of erythritol and stevial glycosides of stevia, the extract of the stevia plant. And of course, since stevia is so sweet, you need to put it onto a carrier. And erythritol is the most excellent carrier because it's also non-caloric, like stevia. And the two combined, you end up with a product, or you can end up with a product that is, you know, pretty much the same sweetness as sugar and can be used on a pound-for-pound basis, equivalent basis, to take out sugar and put in Truvia or erythritol.
That's one of the cool things about it, I think, too, especially in the Truvia product, because stevia has kind of a bitter taste. And by mixing it with a carrier that gives it a little bit of bulk, you can kind of, I don't know, mitigate that bitter kind of a taste.
Absolutely, yeah. And that is a good point you bring up, actually. Why? Because erythritol is used in tabletop sweeteners and in beverages. Very much so for that purpose. So in diet beverages, non-caloric beverages, where stevia can be used, or other high-intensity sweeteners can be used to render it non-caloric, to be diets, to have a caloric content less than 5 per serving. Those beverages, in comparison to the full sugar versions, they lack mouthfeel, they lack body, and they have some of these off days. And you're right, stevia, in that sense, is quite a challenge to use, because mm-hmm. when you use too much of it, it indeed can provide some bitterness, and this can be masked when you use relatively low levels of erythritol that go very well with stevia. So the bitterness is reduced, lingering is cut back. We've got done lots of sensory research to show these benefits, and where we identified these beneficial effects of erythritol on the sensory quality of the sweetener. And so it is often used in combination with high-intensity sweeteners for that reason, to, reduce the differences in sweetness quality that high-intensity sweeteners, also like stevia, often have, to minimize these and bring that sweetness quality closer to that of sugar.
Mm-hmm. So, but erythritol is not as sweet as sugar, right? So you need a little bit more. What's the proportion there?
Erythritol has about 2/3 the sweetness of sugar, so let's say 60-70%. And in a number of applications, when you take out sugar and put in erythritol on a pound-for-pound basis, it is a little less sweet, but still acceptable in some cases, mm-hmm. because, for instance, when you use the combination with fruit, we notice that actually the fruit flavor is enhanced to a certain extent, so that kind of corrects for the somewhat lower sweetness. But you're right. It's often used in conjunction with low levels of high-intensity sweeteners, especially in beverages, of course, the diet beverages, mm-hmm. because there is no way you can sweeten a beverage without a diet beverage without the use of a high-intensity sweetener.
Right. Okay, so I know that xylitol has this polyol configuration with these 5 carbons, and apparently those 5 carbons make it all the difference in the world, and I still never really figured that out exactly what that does. So can you kind of go over in the molecular configuration of erythritol, how many carbons does it have, and how does that relate to real life?
That's a very good point, Shirley. The size of the molecule is actually dictating its metabolic profile. So we'll come back to the comparison with xylitol later, but first the metabolism. Erythritol has mm-hmm. only 4 carbons. Erythritol is absorbed by passive diffusion. So this is not an active process like glucose is absorbed, or a carrier-mediated process like fructose is absorbed, but just by passive diffusion. And the size of the molecule dictates the rate, speed, and rate of absorption. And because it is so small, it is the smallest in the sugar alcohol range of sweeteners, it is the smallest product molecule, and therefore absorbed at the highest rate. 90% of erythritol that is consumed, ingested, is absorbed in the small intestine, then circulates throughout your body without being metabolized, and then excreted through the kidneys with the urine, unchanged. So that is why it is non-caloric, and does not add any calories to the body. Now, there is this little fraction left, 10%, that is not absorbed. This passes on to the colon, and actually, because there is only so little of it, and it is difficult to break down. And there are always other nutrients available for the microbiota that is present in your colon. Erythritol is also not fermented. We've got three studies showing that this is not the case. There is actually one study showing that it might be, an in vitro study, that it might be fermented, but only at, you know, such high use levels where you need to have such high concentrations that are not able to achieve under normal consumption conditions. So generally, erythritol is really not fermented. And also there, so it is excreted with the feces, the remaining 10% unchanged. And that renders erythritol to be fully non-caloric and also to be very well tolerated because, as people may know, when they hear, you know, sugar alcohols and hear maltitol and sorbitol, which are also members of this sugar alcohol family, they often think, oh, that's that stuff that, you know, can cause laxation. When you consume too high levels, excessive amounts, that is indeed the case, which, again, under normal use conditions and consumption conditions, mostly of the time is definitely not the case. But you've got some people who, you know, like the product really and eat lots of it, and they can you know, experience loose stools, flexation, which is a transient phenomenon. You know, it's not a risk to health. It is, you know,
right.
And it goes by pretty rapidly as well. But it's definitely an inconvenience, and that is with erythritol least the case. It's the best tolerated sugar alcohol of the whole polyol family, simply again for the reason that it is so well absorbed and so little moves on to the colon. And the more of a slowly digestible or undigestible carbohydrate, and there are many of them, not only sugar alcohols, so you've got also fibers and soluble and insoluble fibers, when they move on to the colon and are subject to fermentation, they can cause digestive tolerance issues. And so with erythritol, only so little moving on to the colon. It is very well tolerated, even when you consume quite significant amounts of it. Now,
if it's excreted as a whole molecule, so it never really interacts with the you know, the gut microbiome, then, so it doesn't act as a prebiotic. Correct. It just kind of it goes in and goes out all, like, I don't know,
inert.
It's a whole
like
piece,
an inert
substance.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is correct. Coming back to the impact on oral bacteria, like you mentioned, phoxylitol, that there erythritol shares a lot of the same characteristics as xylitol has. So xylitol and erythritol both cannot be consumed by many of the oral bacteria. That is why they are too friendly in the first place, because they cannot be consumed by these oral bacteria to produce acids out of them that can cause this tooth enamel demineralization, weakening of your tooth enamel, and then which makes them more vulnerable for caries. The reason why they have this similarity is because they can, because of the size of the molecule, they can get into the cell. And erythritol more so than xylitol, because it's even smaller than xylitol. And then it interferes with the, you know, enzymatic glycolytic pathway when these bacteria, you know, are metabolizing sugar, glucose. These sugar alternatives, erythritol and xylitol, can sit on the active site of some of those enzymes and interfere with that process, and that reduces their ability to ferment glucose into acids. And that's one part of the active contribution of erythritol and xylitol to towards reducing the risk for the development of dental caries.
And that's one of the cool things about some of these sugars is that they are, they're also inert when the bacteria are eating, or I don't know, I hate to say eating them, but all right, let's call it eating. And so they eventually starve off because they never metabolize and never get any energy from some of these sugars. So we're also finding that some of these sugars are very effective in wound healing, and not just topically on the teeth, but topically on the skin. It's been pretty effective. And erythritol is also helpful in that way, right?
Right. There are studies that erythritol can reduce the counts of Staphylococcus aureus, for instance. That is one of these bacteria that often are present on the surface of skin. And so if there is a wound somewhere, when it has, you know, when it gets a chance to really grow in that wound, it really can be, you know, harmful and prevents the curing of the wounds. And erythritol has shown to reduce or to have an impact on the viability of Staphylococcus aureus. There is also another effect that or reason why erythritol actually is used in skin creams, and that is again related to this molecular size, very likely, and that is it really helps the moisturizing of the skin, especially when it is used in combination with other osmolites. You get a synergistic effect when erythritol and other osmolites are both present in a skin cream and really help to drive the water, the moisture into the skin and moisturize the skin. So that is another nice, you know, aspect of this molecule in topical applications.
Excellent. Yeah, so it's cosmetic and medicinal, potentially, because I don't know that medicine is ready to put sugar into wound care products, but I think they're not going to be able to forego it for too much longer. Is that that's my my 2 cents on that.
Yeah. It's not really, you know, when you use the term medicinal, you think about drugs that often act very strongly on one particular parameter. That is not the case with erythritol. It just in those creams really helps moisturizing of the skin, and it reduces the risk for an infection from Staphylococcus aureus, for instance, to develop. It will help to mitigate that. But other than that, I am not aware of any other actions that it will have there.
Well, we're going to find out as time marches on. We're going to find out that sugar is more help to us, or sugars or sugar alcohols are more help to us than we first admit. For instance, you have a couple of studies that showed that the cardiovascular system becomes more elastic in people who are using erythritol.
Yeah, that is also a very nice finding. And I would not really, you know, classify this as medicinal. It's more, you know, there is this old saying, let food be thy medicine. Perhaps in that context it fits very well. But let me explain why. So yes. We've indeed done lots of in vitro research, animal research, and humans has been done, showing that indeed when there is a chronic elevation of blood sugar in the body, so, you know, diabetics, type 2 diabetics often are under those conditions, that the endothelium, and this is a single cell layer that lines up your entire vascular system, that can be compromised in its function just caused by this high glucose condition. And when that the compromising of this endothelial function, which is called endothelial dysfunction, is often the start of the atherosclerosis process. So it ends up, and many diabetics suffer from that. Now, once you get into that condition, it's better not to, because it's really the start. It would be better to maintain the function of that endothelial, of the endothelial layer. And in a number of studies, it has been shown, including a human pilot study, that indeed erythritol helps in these diabetics to improve the elasticity of the aorta and the endothelial function, especially in the extremities of your bodies, like in your fingertips. The digital arteries, they function again a little better when people consume a certain amount of erythritol. And so here we are, you know, erythritol, as other sugar alcohols, they are pretty safe for diabetics in the sense that they, when you consume them, do not raise or only very little bit raise blood sugar levels, or erythritol does not raise blood sugar level at all. So diabetics, when they consume erythritol, they do not see any further elevation of their blood sugar level. So that is already very good. But on top of that, it may be that and further research has to confirm this. We only have this human pilot study, but further stuff for research is necessary. It seems like the vascular system, can be better maintained in functioning, in its functioning, when these diabetics would consume erythritol on a regular basis. So in this pilot study, it was during a period of 4 weeks that type 2 diabetics consumed erythritol, and they indeed, after those 4 weeks, had a more elastic aorta, and this could be nicely shown in that pilot study. But the pilot study was not with a placebo control, so I mean, it was really, you know, to check whether there is really reason to believe that it works, a first test, and we are looking forward to, you know, to see in
more studies,
extended in really randomized controlled trials whether that is the case.
So we just have like one more minute here, so I just want to make sure that people know how to use the crystallized erythritol if they were buying it to do at home. So can you cook with it? Is it stable at higher temperatures? I guess that's probably the most important feature there. Question.
Yeah. Well, it definitely is very stable. And unlike sugar, it does not take part in Maillard reactions when it can react with other with proteins or peptides present in the food. So it does not cause browning in bakery. So you will see when you use it in a cookie, it will brown less because of the absence of these Maillard reactions. The dough may behave a little differently, and you may need to alter the recipe slightly or prepare it in a different fashion. But it is possible to use it on a pound for pound basis. Now, that's how you can use it in the kitchen. Certainly for making desserts and more liquid products. You can use a product like Truvia as well. There are many recipes found on the websites on the internet where Truvia is used in the kitchen. For the food industry, this is also important to know these characteristics. And when you make, for instance, a yogurt type of product, it is important to know that erythritol is also not fermented by the lactobacilli that are present in the yogurt, so it will still be there after you have made the yogurt. And well, I think that's about it. Unless you have more questions.
No, I think that was it. That was the last of my questions about erythritol and how it works in the body and how it works in the hands of cooks. And and I think that was very, very interesting and very helpful. I really appreciate your time today, Peter. And I look forward to our meeting again, probably at the Under One Roof Conference.
Okay.
And there we have it, a big, long discussion on erythritol, the magical sugar that you're going to hear more and more about as time marches on. So I hope that you find this episode helpful and that you find it worthy of sharing with your friends and colleagues. Follow me along as we go through the entire list of sugars that I have interviews scheduled for. Have a great rest of the day.